We are about to unfold the story of Frankenstein, a man of science who sought to create a man after his own image. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you.
Welcome to the now playing Universal Films Frankenstein movie retrospective series.
It's alive!
Hosted by Jacob.
I'd hate to find him under my bed at night.
Arnie.
You think I'm mad? Perhaps I am.
And Stuart.
England's greatest sinner.
This episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, well, we warn you.
We hope you enjoy the show.
To a new world of gods and monsters.
Today we're discussing Son of Frankenstein, starring Basil Rathbone, Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi, Lionel Atwell, Josephine Hutchinson, Donnie Dunagan, directed by Roland V. Lee. This is the now playing co-host who's hated, blasphemed, and condemned, Arnie.
And Stuart.
And this is the co-host who comes with a locked heart and a bitter hatred, Jacob.
Okay, so Frankenstein, unassailable classic. Bride of Frankenstein, some people call the best Universal monster movie of all time. The Son does not get the same love. I think we can all agree that nobody here has heard much about Son of Frankenstein before.
When we decided to do this retrospective, I knew there were more than two Frankenstein films, but I couldn't have told you how many, and I couldn't have told you any of the titles besides Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. That's all. I didn't know there was a Son of, I didn't know there was a Ghost of.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Mm-hmm. But I do think this movie is significant for a couple reasons. It's important if for no other reason than it's the reason why we have most Universal monster movies. Up to this point, Universal has only greenlit 7. There's only 7 Universal monster movies, and they were done. We talked about this a bit on Dracula's Daughter, that there had been a new studio head, the person that had championed the Universal monsters was gone, and now there was a production code that kind of made it hard to get these kinds of gory, subversive things made. Universal was just going to move on. That trend is over. Now we make big melodramas. And then 1937 happened, and none of their movies made any money. Their only hit, in fact, was that they re-released Frankenstein on a double bill with Dracula, and there were lines around the block. They made money and survived in 1938 because of what they had made in 1931. And so a new studio head came in there and said, all right, we clearly need to do something with Universal Monsters. Son of Frankenstein was a script that had been lying around since Bride of Frankenstein, and so they just rolled into production on that. This was the test to see if they were going to make any more, and after they make this, they make at least 25 more.
Well, I'm sure you mentioned this when we did Dracula last year, but I don't remember. I was shocked that Bela Lugosi is showing up. I gotta figure that's a big part of why this was successful. You got Dracula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Bela Lugosi is part of the Universal Monsters, not a shock. That he comes into this franchise, it does feel like he should be wearing the cape still, right? Dracula versus Frankenstein. Why is he here as Igor? Wow, we'll talk about it.
He looks like the Wolf Man, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's worth pointing out he had fallen on hard times. He was determined not to be a monster. He didn't want to be a horror movie guy. He thought he was Rudolph Valentino. He thought he was a romantic lead that just got started playing a vampire, but could go on and play other heartthrobs, and the world was cruel to him. All of those attempts failed, and by this point, he was a bit player. When they hired him, and they hired him just to do a stock role, it was for $500 a week, which is, by 1939 money, not very much for an actor that was, you know, a commanding star 8 years before. But yes, he was kind of a nobody, and it's because we have the director we do, they came on and they created this part for him. There was no Igor when they picked up that script from 1935, but the director says, I like this actor, let him have fun. This is all Bela. It's worth pointing out that Lugosi is the one that came up with the costume choices, the vocal choices. The Igor that we know, we talked about it last time. Where was Igor? The Igor that we know is created by Bela Lugosi in this movie. I think that's another reason why Son of Frankenstein is so significant as a horror movie entry.
Yeah, I'm going to say there's a few elements of the Frankenstein mythos that we haven't really seen until this one. You talk about Igor, villagers storming a castle. We saw him storm a windmill, but like the castle, that's always something in my head. They really call out the bolts in the neck and what those do. Yeah, you're saying this was super popular, and I feel like that popularity has made it to me in 2023 in these little forms that I recognize as coming from Frankenstein, but I have not seen yet.
It's funny because we always say when dealing with movie franchises, it's the third one where they have to figure out the formula and figure out all the little things that they did right the first couple times. And I do think that, yeah, there's a lot here that does feel like they have taken cues from what worked in the previous two films.
Yeah, they didn't cheap out on this one. It should be said it's the most expensive Universal movie they had made so far. $400,000. On this, and lots of debates about, do we make it in color? Technicolor was a thing. 1939, we have Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz. Do we up the game here and throw away that black and white? And it was the director, Roland Lee, that basically just said no. It was a creative choice. It was not a budgetary choice that he said, I want to retain the feel and the look of those early films. Let's keep it in black and white, and let's keep Karloff. Karloff was the bigger star, had retained some of the power that he had gotten from the Frankenstein role. And this is not the first time he was paired with Lugosi. They had done some Edgar Allan Poe movies at Universal. But yeah, this one I feel like is important because it is Karloff's last time putting on the green makeup. He is done with this part, even though Frankenstein will appear again and again in at least a dozen more movies that Universal makes. This is the last time, if you don't count an episode of Route 66 in 1962, he never put on this makeup again. Oh, I take it back. He also did a charity baseball event.
He played baseball as Frankenstein?
I think he came out and threw the first pitch.
Okay.
You know, one of those things. For charity, trying to raise money. Okay, I'll put it on. But he hated this makeup, and it's worth pointing out, I think he liked James Whale as a director, and Whale is out. He's not even making movies at this point, so his interest had waned. He said something to the effect of, I'm not sure there's anything more for this monster character to do. So he knew after he finished this movie, not doing it again.
Well, of course not. He's killed for good in this one. I mean, we'll talk about it.
That's why he's a ghost in the fourth one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can't kill Frankenstein. But yes, what have they done in this installment? Arnie, why don't you set us up with a plot? We'll talk about it.
It's been many years since the events of Bride of Frankenstein. Henry Frankenstein left the family castle and had a son. That son, Baron Wolf von Frankenstein, is now an adult with a wife and child of his own. He and his family are now moving back to the castle his father abandoned. But the Frankensteins are unwelcome in the town as the citizens there remember the massacre caused by Frankenstein's monster years before. Even the town's police inspector, Krogh, bears the scars as the monster ripped his arm off when he was but a young child. Wolf von Frankenstein hopes to rehabilitate his family name in the town, but he'll find that hard to do, for, living in his castle, is Igor, played by Bela Lugosi. Igor was a grave robber, hanged for the offense, but he survived the hanging and is now a town pariah. Igor has been hiding a secret. Frankenstein's monster, still alive but comatose. Wolf von Frankenstein decides to continue his father's research and attempts to revive the monster using electricity and cosmic rays. He succeeds in bringing the monster back to consciousness, but the monster is subservient to Igor, who uses the monster to get revenge on those who had him hanged. Inspector Krogh believes Frankenstein to be involved in these new murders. Frankenstein tries to convince Krogh that Igor is the killer, but the inspector doesn't buy that lie. Frankenstein goes to kick Igor out of the castle, but Igor attacks the doctor. Frankenstein shoots and kills Igor. The death of Igor greatly upsets the monster. He kidnaps Frankenstein's young son, planning to throw the boy in the burning hot sulfur pits that just happen to be beneath Frankenstein's laboratory. Frankenstein and Krogh chase the monster, and Frankenstein knocks the monster into the sulfur pit, burning the creature to ash. Then Frankenstein and his family turn over the castle to the villagers, and they leave town as credits roll.
As we get started, you know, we had speculated, where is this happening? How modern is this story? When we see the Frankenstein estate and there's a big gate with Frankenstein up on the ledge, I feel like some of the signage we see is in German. They're definitely confirming this is a Bavarian little village, which, again, I was trying to think of the timeline. America in January of 1939 is still willfully out of all the politics going on in Europe. That, you know, Soviet Union had signed the non-aggression pact and we weren't getting involved in any war. And so it wasn't controversial to have a German story. And I don't think any metaphor can be really read about what's going on here and Hitler. At least I can't find it.
No, I don't think so.
No. You got a real life timeline down. I'm trying to figure out the timeline of these films. Like, how long ago did Bride happen? I'm so confused by Inspector Krogh. Like, he got harmed as a child by Frankenstein. He's now a very old adult.
Yeah, it has to be decades because we saw that couple. They were a childless couple last time, right? Henry Frankenstein, he had his woman, but they didn't have any kids yet. That he has a grown son, the son of Frankenstein. I'm a little disappointed because I thought the bride was going to pop out a kid. I actually thought we were going to have reanimated corpses having sex and multiplying, but it's not that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You wanted Son of Frankenstein's monster, and this is Son of Frankenstein. Although I do love that in this movie, they call out that 9 out of 10 people call the creature Frankenstein instead of Frankenstein's monster.
This movie becomes a real pedant when it comes to what you call that monster. I laughed at that.
Yeah, exactly. That we're going to, focus on just another scientist that he seems less demented than his dad. He's coming in here trying to restore the family name. You know, I guess if you invent a monster that kills half a village, people don't like you very much. That's his concern. I don't get the sense that he cares about creating life. You know, it's not about the scientific endeavor. He doesn't want immortality. He just wants to be able to say his name without boos and hisses and pitchforks. And Basil Rathbone, it should be said, top billed here. I don't know if you know this actor, but around this time, he would achieve fame playing Sherlock Holmes. For many people, he is the definitive Sherlock Holmes on screen.
I did not know that was this actor, but I could picture him. Yes, I've seen some of those old ones.
And he had also played a lot of villain roles in Swashbucklers. This director had done a lot of Three Musketeers kind of stuff. He had been the villain in Robin Hood, and they had a good relationship. So that is why he agreed to come here. And again, above Karloff, above Lugosi, Basil Rathbone is coming here with his wife and kid on train, trying to convince himself that rural Frankenstein village will be so much better than London.
I do love the exterior shot of the train. That looks like, what, an N-scale model set? That is not a real train they're filming. I will not believe it.
But I don't want a real train. I mean, again, I think about how cool Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula was because they use model trains. They try to replicate this technology. That's part of the fun of Universal Pictures of this time is that it has this sort of train set quality.
Yeah, you had that great matte painting for that opening shot of Castle Frankenstein.
I think you like that. If you like these films, you have to like the artificiality of the world. If you want realism, then this is lost to you. Obviously, skip everything that's going to happen in the 30s and 40s.
Let me be honest, I actually do like it because it's quaint. It's not realistic in any way, shape, or form, but yet it's kind of cute in its way. I don't know, it's very primitive and very obvious, and I kind of like it for that.
Absolutely. That's where I stand as well, and I think there are people nowadays, that Tim Burton and Michel Gondry, there are just directors that retain this. It is a valid style. It isn't just about, we didn't have the money, we didn't have the technology. It can be a really effective way of bringing you into a kind of story, creating atmosphere.
Yeah, for sure. When you get some of these internal shots of the castle, it's very sparse, but their use of shadow, the way like a staircase will just cast that shadow on a wall, like it looks really great, gothic. It has that Halloween haunted house spooky vibe. Like, these aren't movies that are going to scare me and give me nightmares at night and afraid to close my eyes, but I'm going to have fun. There's going to be a monster, and yeah, we're going to have some good spooks in it.
Yeah, the shadow you talk about, it really had almost a noir feel to it, the way they use shadow in this film. I was really impressed. I was watching this in high def, and it really had dark blacks and high contrast. This is actually a really good-looking film.
Yeah, and again, I want to stress, this is not a cheapie. They spent the most money they ever have on a monster movie on this movie. They really wanted it to succeed, and they put all, you know, everything on the table to try and guarantee that this would be the hit that it proved to be in 1939. Universal had its biggest year, in part because this was such a big hit. And Basil Rathbone would have been a big draw. I know they really wanted Peter Lorre, but this is the era where actors are signed to certain studios, and Lorre belonged to 20th Century Fox. They wouldn't release him. I like Peter Lorre a lot, but I don't see him as a fatherly type. It would be a little weird thinking of him taking his wife and son to a castle and trying to, you know, he starts creepy and gets creepier in most movies.
Yeah, I'd picture him as Igor, but I wouldn't picture him as Wolf.
Yeah, good equivalency. But Basil, or as his character is named, Wolfgang, is here. He says something interesting on the train, worth digging into. He has grown up his entire life being told by his mother, I don't know when his father passed or how much time they had together, but the family line is not Dad's fault. Dad did nothing wrong. Dad was a good guy, and it was the henchmen that screwed everything up. Because he grabbed that abnormal criminal brain, that swap that we talked about in the first movie, that is the reason why everything went wrong, and this guy believes the henchman is the problem. He can fix this by showing how smart the Frankensteins are.
I'm sorry, Dr. Frankenstein, you should be able to tell the difference between an abnormal and a regular brain. Like, that doctor is at fault. I blame your dad a bit.
I don't think he was really too specific. I mean, remember, it even had a handwritten label on the jar that said abnormal brain. I mean,
yeah, you just had to be able to read at an eighth grade level. Abnormal. Pretty well marked there. But anyway, the town's not buying it either. It's worth saying, I love that they get there. And everyone in the village is like waiting there with a stone face. You know, the line is, we come to meet you, not to greet you. We don't like that you're here. And you have a bad reputation that you think you can fix. And as he's talking about, I want to be friends. My dad was a good guy. The crowd is scattering. And the town council, as it were, they had been debating in the previous scene. They do what they have to do. There is a box of materials that they have agreed to give this man that contain all of the diary entries, all of the scientific notation about creating a monster. They give it to him and let him deal with it. They're done.
Yeah, I guess the whole premise was dad died, so the son's coming in here to get his inheritance. And, like, they should have left this stuff out, like, burn all this stuff. Go, I don't know what happened to the notes, but you can have the castle, just not the notes.
I felt like that was in the debate. Like, there was one guy that was like, I told Henry I'd give his son these notes, so I'm going to do that, even though we all know it contains that horrible experiment that we just hope son is not going to try to replicate.
But there is one person in town who's nice, and that is that Inspector Krogh. And I took this as intentional comedy. When he comes in and he has this, like, fake arm that he has to use his good arm to do, what it's taking me to is Dr. Strangelove. That's the only other time in movie history where I've seen somebody have an arm like this that they have to ratchet around with their good arm. And I know it's supposed to be a bit of a tragedy that Frankenstein's monster took his arm, but I do feel like there's some physical comedy going on here with this fake arm.
Yeah, when you say your entire arm was ripped out, that's kind of funny. It's not like you lost a hand or something. Like, the whole arm was ripped out of the socket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a scene obviously not in Frankenstein. They've retconned all of this.
No, there was no child getting his arm ripped off. That would have been horrifying.
Yeah, you could have shown that. Even pre-code, I don't think you could have shown that in a movie, even if they had the effects work to do so. But yeah, no, I take this guy as comedy. He looks like a Nazi to me. Like, there's everything about his suit and all of that. Yeah, the way he plays it. Yeah, he's friendly, but he's friendly in the way, like, I'm here to protect you against the villagers that all want to come and kill you. I'm the thing standing between you and mob mentality. I might have been a general if I had both limbs. Yeah, there is something just kind of funny about the way the actor's playing it. And yeah, I do take him as sort of a lighter character. But he's serious about the fact that he doesn't think the drama is over. That he's the first to mention that there have been 6 unexplained deaths in town, and that there is a whole reason to believe the monster is not gone from this village. So he is the police force, so to speak, that is going to be on call to stop any Frankenstein monster appearances.
And they've all died the same way? Their hearts have ruptured?
I heard that.
Yeah, help me understand these 6 deaths, because we're going to find out that these 6 were all 6 who were on the jury to hang Igor. And so, obviously, Igor, his plot is revenge against all 8 people on that jury. We're going to see him get his revenge against the last 2. Was it the monster who killed these first 6, and then the monster went into a coma?
Yes.
That's what I thought, but what put the monster in the coma then?
A bolt of lightning. Let's get into it. Yes. Lurking around in all of these early scenes, from the very first shot, we had some kids that were going to throw rocks at Castle Frankenstein, and then a face peeks out at them, and the window's already broken anyway, so they run away. That is the face of Bela Lugosi. He doesn't look a thing like Dracula in this. He does look more like Wolfman. He's very hairy and unkempt and seems to have fangs and, yeah, got a great, like, I don't know what that accent is. It's not German. It's not Hungarian.
It's Bella.
It's caveman. I don't know what it is. But yes, he's lurking in the shadows. He sees the family moving in. He's peeking in from some kind of secret window slot in the wall as the boy, Peter, is being put to bed. And yeah, is peeking through the window when the father is toasting his father. There's a big oil painting of Henry Frankenstein, and he's committed to the fact that he's going to fix the family reputation. We see him lurking. What does he want? Eventually, Wolfgang goes out to the broken lab, which I thought blew up last time, but now is just missing a roof. It wasn't as devastating and as explosion as it looked like at the end of Bride.
I mean, if you lost your roof, that's pretty bad, but yeah.
I mean, you remember the end of Bride of Frankenstein, right?
I do.
Yeah, there wasn't a stone standing the way I took it.
And there wasn't a monster standing either, though. Like Jason, every single movie, they're going to have to come up with a way to retcon why this monster is still around.
I mean, we're going to find out the monster's a superhero. He can't die now.
As they're going through the lab, which, yes, it was blown so deep that there's now like a molten sulfur core. Like there's like lava from the earth in part of it. Later, they're going to be like, isn't the lab too hot to work from? And the guy's like, no, I can handle the heat.
And the smell. They talk about how bad the smell is. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever smelled sulfur, but...
Sulfur is bad, yes. Rotten eggs.
Oh, awful.
Yeah, I've definitely... Yeah, sulfur springs, I bathed in them, and yeah, I'm familiar. Quaint, maybe you enjoy it, but I wouldn't want to work in those conditions. But let's just talk about it. So eventually, as this doctor is going through the old lab, a giant boulder falls, and there's Igor. And I say, who? This is a retcon. Why are we having a new character that clearly was never in Frankenstein, clearly never in Bride of Frankenstein? It was Fritz. We liked Fritz. There is a Fritz in this movie. Later, the inspector is going to hire one of the servants named Fritz to spy on the family. This is all done in rewriting. The reason why there's not consistency here is because this director says, yeah, I don't want to use Fritz. We got Lugosi. Let's give it to Lugosi.
Well, Fritz did die. We liked him till he abused Frankenstein, and Frankenstein hung him in that film. But I thought this because, look, I love Bella in this film, the way he delivers those lines when, like, he's talking about what he's been accused of, and he's like, they said. Like, he's so good here. But I was trying to figure this out. He was hung, broke his neck. They said he was dead, but he was alive. I remember there is a body hanging in that first Frankenstein, but it couldn't have been that. So, yeah, was this supposed to be a Fritz-type assistant?
You know, keep in mind, movie continuity being what it was in the 30s, we didn't have...
No VHSs.
Yeah, no one had home libraries. Nobody could... I guess you could go watch in a revival house the original. People did in 1938. But I don't know that people were tuned or cared enough to be like, this guy wasn't there. They know Lugosi... And as you say, Lugosi is a joy in this film. We wish, if only they could just like have the digital technology to put him back in the 1931 film, it would make it better.
Yes.
The best thing about Son of Frankenstein is Igor. And so that they've made it up, I think the director had the right instinct. This may not follow continuity, but this follows where I want to go. I like the fact that we had the henchman. Again, keep in mind, the son blames the henchman, not his father. The henchman that got the wrong brain and was, yes, the town vilified and hung from the gallows, survived a hanging. His neck broke, and he walks around. I don't even know if he's a hunchback or whether he just has a snap neck now.
I think it's a snap neck.
But he is walking funny. He's talking funny. And he has a secret. When he finds out that this guy is an MD as well, he's like, let me show you something. And they proceed into the bowels of this laboratory and find that the creature is still there and alive. And what gets said, Arnie, your question was, he was out on a hunt and got hit by lightning and has been comatose ever since.
Okay, I just didn't catch that line because I thought it was Frankenstein's monster who killed those six people, but the coma threw me for a loop.
Which is bizarre because that's what made him alive was the lightning, so I don't understand why the lightning hurts him too.
Again, I want to stress, this thing had a script written in 1935 that probably was in continuity with Bride, and then now we are 4 years later, and a new director that doesn't care so much about continuity and isn't as campy, just want to point out, doesn't have the same comedy vibes that James Whale had in both movies, particularly Bride. That campiness isn't really here. I don't think he's interested in replicating too much what the previous director had done. He likes Lugosi, and he wants Lugosi to go hog wild. And consequently, I do feel like this movie could be renamed Igor and probably would be more accurate for it. Igor is the star of this. He is this horrible person that caused all the problems and is now baiting the new son of Frankenstein to start up the experiment again and bring his friend alive. This line, I love this line. He, my friend, he does things for me. I was like, ooh, kinky. Yes. But what he's talking about, of course, is the murders.
I'm glad our minds went to the same place with that.
Yeah, that one was, the way he delivered it too was great.
Yeah, but again, yes, what we aren't to totally guess, because we haven't really focused on the village that much, is that, yes, he has been mad that he was sent to the gallows. And there was a jury of eight, because I guess that's what juries were in Germany, and he is going to kill all of them. He's killed six so far. That means two more that he's going to take out. And we do have a courtroom scene. It should be said, at some point, the village gets wind that Igor is still alive. They drag him down and put him on the stand, and I think have a debate about double jeopardy. Can we hang him again?
Yes. This stuff is good. Like, I don't know if this is intentional comedy, but I think this is humorous. Yeah, like, can we kill a dead man again? And then Bella just killing it, like, spitting on him, go, oh, I cough. Like,
yes.
He is a joy in this film.
The line is, bone gets caught in my throat. Yeah. Well, he's got a broken neck, so that's the bone that's caught in his throat. I think this is intentional comedy. I'm laughing with this movie, not at this movie. And I'm surprised how good a time I'm having with it. I mean, this is the longest Frankenstein movie so far. I was kind of dreading that. And Bella is making it so fun.
Yeah, but I just want to stress, if I'm giving credit where credit is due, I feel like what happened was the director says, I don't know, I don't love the script. Bela, what do you want to do? And all the reasons why we're laughing is because of Bela Lugosi. He is the one that was coming up with these one-liners. And again, the script, he was only supposed to, like, do one little bit for 1 week. And they kept him on for almost the entire shoot of this movie.
This is his film!
Yeah, no, they kept him all the way to the end. And again, they were determined to release this movie January, Friday the 13th. They finished January the 8th. They were, like, 5 days from shooting with Bela to having this out in theaters. This was kind of done in a rush and a chaos, and I think we have to attribute all the actors who were kind of making it up as they went along, that the script was only halfway there. It was written by a guy that didn't know movies, had come in from radio plays, and he relied a lot on these actors improvising. So I guess what I'm saying is James Whale made those movies about his sense of humor, and this Frankenstein still feels funny, but different, because it's the sense of humor of the guy who's playing the inspector or the guy playing Igor. It's not permeating the entire movie. It just comes in through these performances.
Yeah, the humor is relegated, I feel like, to certain characters, but I feel like this is a pretty solid production. We talked about the art direction, the map paintings, the models. Like, I even want to compliment this little kid who played the son, Peter. Like, I thought he was a really good child actor. He had real Shirley Temple vibes. Like, when she was a little girl, I guess the only other big thing he did was the voice of young Bambi when I looked up his credits. Like, never really did anything. But, like, I'm surprised that, like, yeah, this feels like it should be a cheap cash-in. And it feels like a legit movie where everyone is actually trying to make this entertaining.
I agree with you mostly. I do find that child to be a little bit annoying. It's just his voice.
Oh, I liked him.
His voice really bothered me, but the kid does fine. It's just he's awfully shrill.
I mean, he's a child.
Yeah, I mean, why they use him is that he's the one that's like going around hunting lions and tigers. He has a rifle. He's being indulged by the nanny to have this imaginary, you know, adventure. Meanwhile, there's really danger. There's really a monster that's coming to him.
A giant's visiting him every night.
At night, that's coming through the wall. And, you know, eventually that will become part of the plot. I do feel like the first half, all the setup is pretty good. I feel the length in the second half. I will just say there's a lot of going back and forth between the castle and the village. And you would have tightened all of this up if they had a finished script before they were starting to shoot the film. But because everything is more or less written the day of, I think you have a lot of overlap. I think you have things. This movie is the longest of all Frankenstein movies by a lot, by about 20 minutes. And it could use 15 minutes of pruning.
15 seems a little bit high because I had fun with what they were doing. But yeah, it a couple of times does start to feel like it's going a bit longer.
For me, whenever Igor is not there,
it's lagging.
Yeah, a little bit of slowness to all of this. That supposedly, again, Son of Frankenstein, this is Basil Rathbone's movie, and by this point, he has committed to the project that Igor has asked of him. He believes, and this is really dumb, crazy logic, if I just make another monster and it doesn't kill people, everyone will like me. That's totally going to work, right? The problem wasn't the lightning. Now that he's got, like, electrodes to create, to zap the bolts, they don't actually have to wait for a thunderstorm and levitate him up into the air. They can just hook him up to machines and zap him this time. I don't think that was the problem.
I love his explanation. He goes back. I mean, you guys say you didn't have to worry about continuity. I feel like there is quite a bit of continuity here. He's like, my father thought he was accessing something beyond the ultraviolet spectrum, which is what they were talking about in that techno babble. I mean, that's good continuity, but then I have to laugh because he's like, but it wasn't that. It was cosmic rays. I'm like, oh my God, he's making the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, he beat Marvel to it.
The idea that a different kind of electricity is the solution to what went wrong is to fundamentally misunderstand. And keep in mind, this wasn't a character that was there. He didn't see it go down. He's been told the henchman screwed up. My dad is a brilliant man. But yeah, he's really bought into the idea that if he just follows dad's assignment to the letter and adds these cosmic rays, it'll all go great. And we see a little bit of tension between Igor and the butler, that there's this guy Benson that's brought in to kind of help take notation as the Frankenstein is getting to work on his monster and taking his blood pressure and all of that. We see that Igor is already early on maybe calculating that he doesn't like this guy. And when Benson eventually feels like this is a bad assignment and that his master should tell the inspector, I think that is the reason why he gets added to the hit list. Because never forget, Igor, once the zapping happens, it looks like at first the body just kind of lays there and smokes. Everyone thinks it's a failure. But that night, Peter talks about a giant coming into his room and giving him a storybook. They run to the lab. He's groaning. He's moaning again. They know they have a living Frankenstein again. Igor doesn't want any more experimentations. And consequently, this is an interesting choice. This Frankenstein don't talk. We do not have the thoughtful, growing, becoming more human characterization of Bride from Boris Karloff.
And I really wondered if we would when they bring him back. I just kept waiting. I was like on the edge of my seat, waiting for him to say something like he did in that movie. But this is, yeah, a throwback to that first Frankenstein's monster who only talks in grunts and growls, which is let's face it, the more stereotypical Frankenstein impersonation.
It is, and yet I will say I don't feel like Karloff is as good as he was in the previous two movies. That he needed something, and some of it maybe is the makeup. I don't feel like it looks the same. You know, he's aged, of course, as well, but he doesn't wear it as well, and they've taken away his words. And I don't feel like he has too many scenes where he matters. He mostly lies on a slab for most of this movie, and every now and then he kind of reaches out like he's going to choke. Maybe I'm going to choke you, and then maybe I won't. Like, he has one moment in a mirror that I think is kind of a nice human moment, but I miss seeing Boris Karloff be able to give that kind of tragic performance.
Yeah, this is mostly a Pied Piper deal when it comes to Frankenstein. Like, he's just reacting to music. Maybe that's continuity from the blind man playing his fiddle and that soothed the beast. But yeah, what is his capacity for thought in this film? Because he doesn't do much unless Igor's playing that flute, which I guess makes him kill people. Maybe because it's such an annoying flute. He just wants it to stop.
Yes, I think any of us could be driven mad by a flute. And so Igor, yeah, playing these tunes, it is funny. Again, I don't think it's James Whale funny. I don't think that this is a campy movie, but there is something funny about watching him pull out this old school pipe and start playing, and suddenly the monster is storming off. And, you know, I think the first person that he kills is one of the guys from the courtroom that is driving by and spitting on the castle while he's in a carriage. I didn't catch his name, but this carriage driver will be choked, pulled off his ride, and then staged like he'll been run over. They make it look like an accidental killing. They're trying to hide the fact that, yes, this is another assassination.
And that the monster knows to put the body in front of the wheels and run the body over that way.
It's all about the notes that Igor is playing. That's what's telling him to do that.
Yeah, we can't begin to understand, I guess, the brilliance of this Igor, the real mind, the real criminal mind.
Even though they're all dying of ruptured hearts, like, do they see the monster and their heart just explodes out of fear? There's a lot of talk from Frankenstein in this one, like, he's not afraid of the natural world because he understands it. So, I mean, I always try to figure out this ruptured heart thing, like, why go through the ruse of putting it under the wheels and all that if they're just going to find out, like, yeah, it's a monster death because it's a ruptured heart.
Well, I take it from the next death that we see that there's this guy, the eighth juror, Emil Lang, at least we have a name for this one. Yeah, he was in his shop. It's all done in silhouette. He's sitting by the fire and the creature comes in, closes the blinds, and then just kind of, I don't know, he takes his fist and he pops him on the head. Would that blow up your internal organs? Did he hit him so hard that his heart popped? Maybe. I don't know. Is that how he killed everyone else? It's not how he killed the carriage driver, so there's no consistency in any of this. They're limited by the fact that they're still under this production code restraint. They can't show blood spatter. They can't really make it look too violent. So they do tricks like this that it's as gory as it needs to be.
Yeah, I don't know if I need gory Frankenstein. Like, this is fine.
Yeah, I'm not expecting gore from a 1930s film. I'm not expecting gore from any of these Universal monster movies. So it's suiting me just fine. And I see what you're saying about Karloff's performance here, but when he's the monster out being monstrous, I'm enjoying that it's him under the makeup once again. I like that bit of continuity.
Yeah, I guess I just don't feel like it is the same monster. It's a pretty anonymous performance.
Yeah, this isn't that goth Frankenstein. This is very much a B-movie monster mash almost. This does feel like the Wolfman and Frankenstein hanging out, getting up to mischief or something.
Here's what I think they needed, and maybe they were going to get it, and again, they ran out of time. I just want to say that they finished shooting and projected the movie around the country within the same week, so there wasn't a whole lot of room to come up with new ideas, but I wish we just had a few more scenes of Lugosi and Karloff, right? Like, they're friends! And so, seeing how the emotional manipulation happened, seeing particularly why the creature wants the approval of this creepy man with the flute. Yeah, I think that would have helped. That would have been the tragedy, seeing how this little reanimated child was duped by someone with a very abnormal homicidal mind. But there is a lot of stuff. I feel like what we're talking about is more or less an hour of the movie, and there's still 30 more minutes to go. There's a lot with this inspector who should know better. He should know as these deaths are happening. And I think he does kind of know. The butler's missing. These people are turning up dead. And we know Igor is still alive and playing the flute. We've had eyes on him and we can't put him at the crime scene. But they have enough to, like, bust this Frankenstein operation. And I don't feel like Wolfgang is doing a good job of keeping his composure. Like, he's melting under the examination of this guy when he comes to dinner.
Yeah, this is where there's a lot of stuff where, like, you could cut this, let's get to it. All this stuff about Benson and where's his body and here's his watch.
Fritz, that he has a spy within the staff that they're going to report to him.
Yeah, nothing happens.
I think that, again, Fritz was the name of the henchman from the first one. I think the idea was to keep that consistency. And then when Bela just kept turning in week after week these great dailies, they're like, forget Fritz. All the good parts about Fritz get given to Bela. And so, yeah, we have a character that never reports on anything valuable, that just takes up space. And it matters. In a movie like this, when Frankenstein has been 70, 80-minute commitments, to have one that is close to 100.
I'm shocked that this is 100 minutes long.
Yeah, that's a big jump for something that didn't need 20 more minutes.
And this is the 1930s 100 minutes where, like, credits are 10 seconds. So it's a full 100 minutes you're sitting through.
But I still like this inspector. I'd say he's my second favorite character next to Igor in this movie. So having the inspector there, I love it when Wolf von Frankenstein is playing darts and just biding time, throwing these darts. And then he asks the inspector, do you want to play darts? Which I thought was like a bit of a razzing of the inspector.
Yeah, because he got no arm to throw him.
And then the inspector does play with his left arm, but he's really bad. He like misses the whole board and everything. I'm enjoying these scenes still and waiting for the Benson situation to come to a head.
It's not all bad. It could just be tightened up.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that, Jacob.
He keeps coming for visits and then leaving. That's the problem. The only thing I like about that is that they have this giant door knocker, like as tall as me on this door. They like, it's like a giant gong or something. They can barely like knock on the door. It's very funny how that people keep coming to the door and saying someone new is dead. And he keeps having to leave and come back. And certainly by the time he's found Benson's pocket watch in the kids' room, that's enough evidence to arrest him. But he needs to find the body. Eventually, he finds the door in the wall and actually finds Benson's body in there. Yeah, it takes a long time for him to finally show up wearing the hat, which signifies I'm here on official business. I'm here to arrest you. And by that point, we're into the full climax of the film.
I love Frankenstein's response, though. He's like, you can arrest me, but it's like a house arrest. He can't leave. All right, but I'm going to go kick out Igor. I can be under arrest, but I'm getting rid of Igor.
Yeah, not just kick out Igor, shoot Igor. Like, he goes there. This is really the defining moment. And again, why I stress, maybe you should have had some moments of friendship between Monster and Igor. To kill Igor and then to see Karloff's reaction to his friend lying there dead is what sets him into the rage. Up to this point, he's not killed by his own volition. Igor is the murderer, and he's just the tool, the hypnotized innocent. But after this point, he is trying to kill, and even kill Peter. The little boy is going to become his target. He's going to throw Peter into the lava, like he threw that little girl from the first film into the lake. That's because he loved Igor so much, and I don't think that comes through.
I took it as these guys were besties and had hung out in the castle together when nobody else was around. I got his anger, his rage, and his pain out of this.
You get it, but you don't see it. The difference between inference and drama is the emotional response you have in watching something happen.
I'll agree with that. Like, I understood when he holds Peter over those sulfur pits that that's a revenge thing for his friend dying. But yeah, I would have liked scenes with them. Like, this is going to sound silly. How does the monster feel about doing these killings? Does he like that flute music? Like, there are things like, yeah, there is like a buddy comedy I think you could have done with these two. And I think there's a lot of emotions and just human traits that you could explore with that weird team up.
I understand your guys' instinct with this. I think, though, you're being seduced by the flute music of Bela Lugosi's great performance here and just wanting more Bela and to see him do that.
I mean, that's true. I do want more.
You don't? I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, this movie is not very good when he's not there. I will stress, yeah, I'll grant you, the inspector's kind of fun. But I don't feel like the son of Frankenstein, Basil Rathbone, is giving me much.
No, I'll agree with that. If it's not the inspector, if it's not Bella, or if it's not Boris, what few scenes Boris has on his own, yeah, my interest does wane a little bit.
We haven't even mentioned the wife, but there's been lots of scenes in this very weird bedroom. For some reason, the beds are like an angular position, because some proverb was said about when there's loaves of bread, set the beds head to head or something like that.
Yeah, they're head to head, like your heads touch when you sleep or something. It's so weird.
I'm like, if you got a lot of bread, that you can feed a lot of mouths. You need to both be in the same bed. But
well, no, it's what it is if the house is filled with dread, place the beds at head to head. Not if it's filled with bread. It's not like they had loaves and loaves.
Oh, I thought it was abundance. I thought they were saying you're rich, you have bread, so you can... Well, I don't know. This feng shui is way off, and it exemplifies the lack of chemistry between this leading lady and our leading man.
Yeah, I don't even know why you're bringing up the wife, because she does nothing.
Yeah, I mean, and I wanted to stress she's in at least 15 minutes of the movie. I'm talking about a 15-minute bloat. She's part of that. None of her scenes are good.
And I thought they were going to write her out of the movie because there is the period where Frankenstein wants to send his wife and son away to be safe when the monster is out there raging. And then it's the inspector who comes and says, you can't leave. And so that's what keeps Peter Frankenstein around for this being the boy in distress at the end.
Yeah, the Universal monster movies so far that I've seen, they've never gone so dark that they can't give sort of a happy ending. And one way of handling her is to have her be the cost, right? That she dies or something like that. We talked about maybe the wife character last time being the parts that create the Bride of Frankenstein. You could have killed Elsa and she would have had an impact on this plot. As it is, she's just sort of this wholesome character that keeps reminding our very boring lead that he should be attending to his family and not being obsessed with the monster. And there is no cost. At the end, what is kind of strange is that the creature can't do it. He grabs the kid through the secret passage and takes him to the lava pit and does not, I mean, he's not rescued. This kid doesn't go in because the monster realizes, I don't want to kill kids.
What I do love, though, is the monster still wants to rip off the inspector's arm because he's going to yank off that fake arm again during all this.
That is really funny to me. I thought that was perfect.
I mentioned that Roland Lee has done a lot of swashbucklers with Errol Flynn. You get that here in this ending, right? Like, he comes, like, I don't even know where this rope is, but he comes flying in on a rope to kick him into the lava and all of that. Like, this is a very Errol Flynn climax. And then he gets to go. Like, the inspector is going to allow this man, for all that he has done, and all the blood that is on his hands and his family's legacy has not been restored. Just let him leave town and leave me the deed to this cool castle. Maybe the villagers can do something better with it than your family has.
Yeah, I think he realized that Igor was a major significance to what Frank the monster was doing. I keep wanting to call him Frankenstein. I don't want to upset this film, so I will call him the monster. But yeah, I think... because Igor was involved, that does take, at least for me, take some of the blame away from the monster because he has that abnormal brain.
And so here's a question worth posing. Igor, is that an evil character or did he have a valid point? If someone hung me and my neck cracked but I didn't die, I might want to get the jury that did that to me.
He seemed to be okay with still being alive, though.
If he had killed the eighth guy... would he have kept going? Like, he killed Benson, the butler, which leads you to believe that there would have been new enemies to slay. But would the murders have stopped had the mob not come crashing at the gates? It feels like bad timing more than Igor wanting more blood.
No, Igor would want, I don't know, a fresh loaf of bread or something to have Frankenstein kill the local baker so he could just take it. I feel like he would have really abused that power.
I also agree that I think Igor would have killed to keep the monster a secret, the same reason he killed Benson. I think that Igor would have kept killing, and he was a grave robber who was sentenced to legally be killed. It's not like his revenge is against those who wronged him falsely.
No, he really did break the law.
He did his master's bidding. He didn't do anything that wasn't sanctioned by Henry Frankenstein. And Henry was able to leave and have a family life and presumably live to an older age.
I just didn't take Igor as Fritz. I didn't see them as the same character because so many years have passed.
This was just another assistant that stole bodies too, and he got caught.
Look, I'll give you this. Bela is a great monster, so yes, I guess we can just write it. The story works if you just say, no matter what, he would have used Frankenstein to keep killing, and this had to end. That it's heroic that both he has been shot dead, and this monster has been thrown into the lava pit, and will not be returning in Boris Karloff form again.
That is a shame. But, I mean, he's dead for sure, right? I mean, again, I go back to Jason Voorhees, but we see the body burn up. They, like, linger on the shots of the body turning to ash. They're making damn sure there will not be any more Frankenstein's monster films.
Obviously, I've already explained this is the litmus test, and you, of course, know we got another movie to review next week called Ghost of Frankenstein. So there's your out.
Yeah, but it's his ghost.
Yeah, right. He's just going to be a phantom walking through walls now. You made him even more powerful.
So Jacob Stewart, before we get to the ghost, do you recommend The Son of Frankenstein? Jacob.
I wasn't looking forward to this one. I'm like, okay, by part three, these old films, like the Dracula Universal ones, like that was a real trudge to get through. Like those were not great films. I liked the first two ones, but I'm like, number three, this isn't going to do it. And then I saw Bella's name in those opening credits. I'm like, or is it? I got excited that he was here. And yeah, this film is all about Bela Lugosi. Like, without him, there is no recommending, I don't think, Son of Frankenstein. Because just seeing the film and, yeah, maybe what Stewart's saying is true. Is like, once he came on and they're like, oh yeah, this is the guy. Let's revolve everything around this character. Yeah, that's a good instinct. Because without him, I don't know. It's not the greatest story. There's a couple other comedic characters that we've talked about. And there's good, you know, map paintings and trains and shadows and all that. But yeah, these characters are kind of boring. But Bella brings a real spice to this with Frankenstein, who is not much. Like, this isn't really Frankenstein. This is Igor. You were right, Stuart. Call this Igor the movie. But I'm going to recommend it because, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's not, doesn't have the pathos and the gothic pining for death of those original Frankenstein films, but yeah, it's a B movie. It's a monster mash, and it's a good time. So watch this one.
Stuart.
Yeah, I definitely want to start by saying it's lesser than where we've been. Frankenstein is a bona fide classic and a major reference point for the entire horror genre. It's foundational. It will always be historically important. And Bride was a surprisingly funny spoof of that really kind of pioneered camp films. And so Son is not pioneering anything. He's got a lot to learn from his parents. He's more meandering. This thing is longer. It doesn't have the comedy. It doesn't have the surprises. Again, my disappointment is that, you know, you call it Frankenstein. I'm looking at Boris Karloff. This is the least essential performance he'll be giving. Even more sad because it's the last time he'll give one. He deserved a swan song, and he gets left behind by a really great, amazing performance by Bela Lugosi. Yes, the reason to recommend this, the reason why I'm going to say this is still worth following is because, yeah, he's even better as Igor than he was as Dracula. I will make that case. And all of it is this actor. Again, the flute, the voice, the costuming choices, that's all him coming up on the fly, agreeing that he is now going to be a horror figure. He is no longer a romantic leading man. And really just embracing his legacy as a horror icon, the best I've ever seen him. And so, yeah, forget Basil Rathbone and his boring wife. Forget Boris Karloff, or rather see him in the other two movies. Igor proves he is as great a universal monster as Dracula and Frankenstein. Thank you, Bela Lugosi.
And I think I liked this movie even more than either of you. I did love the Bela Lugosi stuff. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it can be downplayed how good Bela Lugosi is as Igor in this film. I mean, there's a reason why In Young Frankenstein, the assistant is not named Fritz. It's named Igor. So I do love Bela Lugosi here, as you guys did, but I think I just enjoyed the overall atmosphere of this film more than you guys did. I enjoyed the non-Bella stuff more than you guys did. You know, I found myself into this film, and like you, Jacob, I wasn't looking forward to watching this one. I knew it was a lot longer than the others. I felt the last two films, while I've recommended both, they were very thin films. You know, there wasn't a lot there for me with them. I didn't get all the subtext of Bride, and so I really thought this one might just be a slog, and I was surprised how into it I got and how much fun I had watching all of it. So I actually like this one more than the original Frankenstein, despite that one being the bona fide classic.
Okay, you do like it more than us then.
Yeah, that's saying a lot that you think this is the best yet.
No, I still think Bride's the best yet, but this is a close second and a solid recommend.
Okay, well, yeah, we're all on the same note. Yes, we're all hitting the same note of the flute, that go see this one. We command you. You're going to enjoy it more than you think. And a lot of it, I would say 80% of it, is because Bela Lugosi is even better as Igor than Dracula.
It's just so funny to me that this one is good, and yet I've never heard of Son of Frankenstein until we started looking at doing a Universal Monsters retrospective. And so I feel this is a lost one that people should go rediscover.
I agree with you, Arnie. Like I said at the beginning, I feel like a lot of the key mythos is in this film introduced here. So this obviously made an impression on people.
I agree. So far, they have all contributed to the franchise. Will that be true when we get to our last film we're covering, and at least this leg of Universal Monsters? Ghost of Frankenstein is what we're covering next week. It'll be 1942. Good news, Bela is back. It won't be Boris Karloff this time, but Bela's Igor is back, and we will have Lon Chaney now putting on the makeup.
So he is Frankenstein. We're not doing a ghost story. I literally don't know what to expect, but being that it's called Ghost of Frankenstein, and given how crazy some of those Dracula sequels went, I really thought it could just be a poltergeist.
It might be. What do I know? But there's an actor putting on makeup, and we've seen him. The same guy that was son of Dracula is now going to be the ghostly form of Frankenstein. Also coming back this Friday, Axel Foley. I don't think he's coming back as a ghost. He's coming back as an ass kicker in this super slick, actioned up Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Tony Scott directed film. They have a real director for this one and really changes the feel of the movie. Is it for the better? Is it for the worse? It certainly didn't break the blockbuster ground that the first film did, but it has its ardent fans too, so we will be reviewing that for our gold level donors this Friday. Hopefully you can join us because I had a great time with those shows and I hope you guys have a great time listening to those shows.
Martin Brest is a real director. I don't know where you get off dissing the Beverly Hills Cop 1 director. It's got a director this time. I mean, the guy made Best Picture nominated films.
It's a name that us Gen Xers will recognize.
But at the time, he was not a known director. Nobody expected him to pull a $200 million movie out with Eddie Murphy. Nobody had those expectations. With Beverly Hills Cop 2, now there's expectations, and they did try to get the first director back. That's worth saying. We'll talk about it on the show, but he chose not to come back. But they were going with a known quantity with a known franchise now, bringing in the guy who did Top Gun.
Yeah, and I think you can tell that. I mean, again, join us this Friday and you'll see, even though lots of things are repeated from that first movie, it definitely has a different charge to it, an action movie vibe to it that I think Tony Scott is his signature.
So thank you for joining us for Now Playing. Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me for this review. Good night all, and pleasant dreams.
Come on! You've had enough excitement for one night. This strange man you call a monster is dead.
Thank you for listening to this Now Playing Podcast movie review. We hope you enjoyed the show.
I must continue my experiments.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
My
friend, does think for me.
Want more reviews like this one? In the archive section of NowPlayingPodcast.com, you'll find more than 1,000 in-depth movie reviews from our panel of hosts.
Before you came, I was all alone. It is bad to be alone.
On our site, you can hear reviews for every installment in the world's biggest film franchises, including the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Star Wars, Spider-Man, Batman, X-Men, James Bond, Middle Earth, Jurassic Park, Fast and Furious, and Transformers.
But this isn't science. It's more like black magic.
Plus, we have individual movie reviews, such as Titanic, E.T., Inception, Big Hero 6, Ready Player One, Pulp Fiction, Apocalypse Now, Doctor Strangelove, and hundreds more.
Your health will be ruined if you persist in this madness.
And come back to NowPlayingPodcast.com next Tuesday for another all-new movie review podcast.
We're going to explore something so foreign to us, we can't even imagine what it's going to be like.
Support from listeners like you keeps Now Playing Podcast on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for your courtesy.
You can donate directly by tapping the support button at NowPlayingPodcast.com. And you can join our crowdfunding campaign for early access to new episodes, exclusive reviews, and bonus reviews.
You'll do as I say, and you will have everything you want.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
Here he planned a miracle. Saw it come to pass.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
He's completely superhuman.
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
I'm exhausted. I must get sleep.
Work. Finish.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
How beautifully dramatic.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Nobody'd believe me. Right? I'll wash my hands of it. Let them all be murdered in the beds.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
As long as you continue to live in this place, you're in danger.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You're speaking in riddles, Herr Inspector.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2024, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
We belong dead.
No, Igor would want, I don't know, a fresh loaf of bread or something to have Frankenstein kill the local baker so he could just take it. I feel like he would have really abused that power.
You guys are really obsessed with baked goods tonight, so I don't know if you're just hungry.
It was the olden days. They had bakeries back then.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about the apothecary, but I don't even know what that is.
It was the pharmacy.
Yeah. I also agree that I think Igor would have killed to keep the monster a secret.